This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. Venezuelan authorities have arrested six people they call terrorists and hired killers in what President Nicolas Maduro says was an assassination attempt against him. The apparent attack during a military parade involved two drones with explosives. A group called the National Movement of Soldiers in T-shirts claim responsibility. Georgia State University professor Jennifer McCoy says the incident, whether real or staged, makes Maduro and his government look vulnerable.
And whether it was an actual intent on him, then it shows the vulnerability of the security because it got fairly close. If it was, on the other hand, as some have alleged, actually staged by the government to rally support, that shows the vulnerability that they're feeling for losing support because of the dire economic situation.
Maduro initially blamed Colombia and opposition supporters in the U.S. for the incident, but Bogota and Washington denied involvement. At least one car bomb blast in front of a restaurant in the Somali capital, Mogadishu, killed at least three people, wounded several others. The jihadist insurgency group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility. At least 91 people were killed. It happened when a powerful earthquake rocked the Indonesian island of Lombok on Sunday. Residents and tourists raced into the street. This man from the Netherlands was injured in the rush.
Like a truck passing by, but then it got really heavy and also, yeah, the noise was crazy. So I thought, okay, this is bad, this is an earthquake. So I started running to the exit, but then everybody who was in the restaurant was also running through the exit. So it was like a big stampede and everyone fell, and there were like three or four people who fell on top of me.
Last week, 17 people were killed when an earthquake hit Lombok. This is VOA News. A vehicle carrying the U.S. ambassador to Bangladesh, Marsha Bernicot, was attacked in the capital, Dhaka, as she was leaving a farewell dinner for the chief of a non-governmental organization. Thousands of students there have been protesting traffic conditions in Dhaka over the past week over two students who were hit and killed by buses. It's unclear whether the attack on the U.S. ambassador was related to those protests. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton says the Trump administration is not starry-eyed about the prospects North Korea will denuclearize. Appearing on Fox News Sunday, Bolton was asked whether the U.S. might conclude Pyongyang is not serious about it.
That point may well come. As I've said to you and others before, there's nobody in this administration starry-eyed about the prospects of North Korea actually denuclearizing. But I think what's going on now is that the president is giving Kim Jong-un a master class in how to hold a door open for somebody. And if the North Koreans can't figure out how to walk through it, even the president's fiercest critics will not be able to say it's because he didn't open it wide enough.
Returning to Washington from Singapore at an Asian security conference, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo downplayed remarks by his North Korean counterpart, Ri Yong-ho, who expressed alarm over Washington's insistence on denuclearization. Pompeo suggested North Korea's tone was moderated, but Pyongyang has to deliver on the commitment made in the Trump-Kim summit in Singapore in June. The White House will announce later today the reimposition of U.S. sanctions on Iran. The Secretary of State Pompeo said, in the result of Tehran's maligned activities, he says, the U.S. withdrew from the Iran nuclear agreement in May. This week's sanctions target Iran's purchase of dollars and trade in gold and precious metals and dealings in metals, coal, and industrial-related software. Ian Lustig is a University of Pennsylvania political science professor.
There's no doubt that the sanctions, both those that will be imposed now and in a way more serious sanctions to be reimposed in November having to do with oil exports, they will hurt the Iranian economy.
The Iranian currency has plummeted in recent months, prompting Tehran to ease its foreign exchange rules and arrest several people, including the deputy central bank governor, over the drop in the rial. A suicide bomber killed three Czech soldiers on a NATO foot patrol in eastern Afghanistan. An American and two Afghan soldiers were also wounded, the Taliban claiming responsibility. Get more news at our website. That's voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Money Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng, Washington. Today is Monday, August 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A holdout group signed South Sudan's latest power-sharing agreement.
This agreement is not final. Just for your information, we will continue to deliberate on issues of number and boundary of states, as well as the National Pre-Transitional Committee and its funding.
Kwajo Lasso is the Interim Secretary General of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. Malawi's former Vice President launches a new political party. 11 students are dead and many more wounded from a school bus accident in Kenya. And Zimbabwe's MDC Alliance denies it has called for a shutdown today, Monday.
It is fake news. I think that it is intended to confuse our supporters, confuse the people. We think that part of the president's strategy is not to reveal what he's going to do.
Nkululeko Sibana is the spokesman for Zimbabwe's opposition MDC Alliance. Human rights groups urge President Mnangagwa to stop post-election violence, and there is a shortage of blood bags in the Gambia. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A holdout group, South Sudan Group, Sunday signed the country's latest power-sharing agreement in Khartoum in the presence of regional leaders. The South Sudan Opposition Alliance had refused to sign the agreement because of outstanding issues on governance. Kwajo Lasso, Interim Secretary General of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says even though the group signed the deal, negotiations will continue. Lasso says some of the group's representatives experienced intimidation and arm twisting from Sudanese security services, including threatening to turn them over to the South Sudan government if they did not sign the deal. He says the devil is in the details of the agreement.
This agreement is not final. Just for your information, we will continue to deliberate on issues of number and boundary of states, as well as the National Pre-Transitional Committee and its funding. Also, we will be continue discussing responsibility sharing at all levels of governance, from national, state, and local government. So to make the long story short, this is not a final. This is a process.
One of the issues for which you were holding out was the issue of power sharing at the state level and then the organization of a referendum. So did the South Sudan government give any inch that motivated you then to sign?
No, there's no any motivation. However, this is a consideration from the head of states of IGAD countries that will continue to negotiate on these issues. Therefore, this document is not final and binding at this moment.
Tell me, there was a report that some of your people were complaining in Khartoum that Sudan security people were harassing or intimidating some of your people, involving arm twisting in order to get you to sign this agreement. Is that true?
To set the record straight, for the last 48 hours or 72 hours, our members in Khartoum have went through extensive psychological intimidation, as well as, for the lack of term, not necessarily literally, arm twisting of members of SOA, whereby coercing them to sign to this agreement. Especially some members who currently residing in Khartoum in Sudan, they've been threatened on multiple occasions that they will be handed to Juba, or as well as been expelled from the country. This is not new as far as dealing with a kind of such an environment, which is very, very, very unconducive for any peace negotiation, because you cannot negotiate peace under duress. And that's what most of our members have been experiencing for the last 48 hours or 72 hours.
So how sincere is this signature that your people put on this document if you say you were intimidated?
Well, time will tell. As we agreed with the head of states to continue negotiating the issues that held us back, time will tell how genuine are those signatures and even the spirit of implementation. As the saying goes, the detail is in the pudding. Or another word, the devil is in the detail, basically. We'll see how the time progresses.
As I say, this is an ongoing process. The mediators now will extend time. I mean, Khartoum will be for an additional week or two to continue this process.
But this is a serious business because, as you know, the people of South Sudan, I'm sure you will agree, that they are really tired with this war.
Absolutely. We feel for our people. The people are suffering. They're in refugee camps, in an IDP's camp internally. The message is very clear. They have suffered, but they're willing to take extra day to have a genuine, lasting peace in our country.
Kouadjé Lassou is the Interim Secretary General of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. He was speaking with me from North Carolina, USA. In Zimbabwe, human rights groups are applying pressure on President Emmerson Mnangagwa to guarantee that there will be no repeat of last week's shooting of opposition protesters by the army, which claimed at least six lives. The government says it's equally worried by the deaths of protesters who were accusing the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission of rigging last week's general election for the ruling ZANU-PF. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
In an interview, Robert Chibambu, spokesman for Amnesty International in Southern Africa, said President Emmerson Mnangagwa must order the army to stay in the barracks and not to be used to disperse opposition supporters, as what happened last week on Wednesday, resulting in at least six deaths and dozens of people injured. Chibambu said that is reminiscent of Robert Mugabe's 30-year rule of Zimbabwe.
Amnesty International is saying that the Zimbabwean authorities must immediately stop intimidating people and launch a prompt and effective investigation into the killing of the six people by the military last week. President Mnangagwa must make good on his commitment to settling political differences peacefully, respectfully, and within the confines of the law.
Under Mugabe's 30-year rule, which ended last November following military-led pressure on the 94-year-old politician, human rights groups accused Zimbabwe of violations. Simon Kayamoyo, acting Minister of Information, said Zimbabwe was still committed to upholding human rights. On Friday, after being asked about the killings, President Mnangagwa told reporters that
that was an unfortunate incident where some people lost their lives. After the burning of several vehicles and the locking up of people in a room to burn them, the police were overwhelmed and then they summoned, as is required under our constitution, assistance from the army to stop wanton destruction of property. I'm going to institute an independent commission to inquire into the issues we have raised.
Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance last week on Wednesday demonstrated against the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which it accused of rigging the vote and holding the results of the July 30th polls, when the army reportedly used live ammunition and claimed at least six lives. Nelson Chamisa on Friday told reporters that his MDC Alliance Party would pursue all available routes, including protests, to reclaim what he called the stolen vote. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
Zimbabwe's opposition MDC Alliance has denied it has called for a shutdown today, Monday. The alleged message calling for the shutdown had been circulating on social media. Spokesman Nkululeko Sibanda says the MDC Alliance is occupied at the present with a quote challenge on the presidential election results. He said the alleged shutdown information is all fake news intended to confuse Alliance supporters.
There hasn't been such a call from the president, and we think that part of the president's strategy is not to reveal what he's going to do.
So where do you think the information is coming from on social media?
It is fake news. As you're in America, you would know that the American election was affected by this fake news generation, if you like. I think that it is intended to confuse our supporters, to confuse the people, by calling for different actions at many times, such that when we do call for action, it will not be heeded to as people think it's fake news.
So what is your party doing about the results that were announced last week?
President Nelson Chamisa has already rejected the results, and he has evidence that the result that was announced was not verified, and also that it did not reflect what came out of the polling station. So he has emphatically rejected that, and so has the alliance as a whole. What he's going to do, as declared on Friday, is that he is going to employ a variety of strategies to get the government to accept the will of the people rather than the will of the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
How do you get the government to accept the ruling of the people? Do you plan to challenge the results in court?
That will be one of the many strategies that President Nelson Chamisa is going to employ. The courts are going to be part of it, but they're not going to be the only route to deal with this legitimacy crisis that the current government has plunged our country into.
I was reading an article where the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, is calling on the opposition to accept the results of the election. Any response?
Well, certainly the president may not have spoken to us yet or at the time making that comment. I think that the president of Chamisa is engaging with President Ramaphosa to find out, to brief him on what he knows and what evidence he has with regard to the outcome of the election. And that from that point of view, it is likely that the region will realize that political stability, legitimacy, and free and fair elections are important in Zimbabwe, and that it is important for the Zimbabwean political landscape to be governed by static norms, by static protocols on elections, and static frameworks.
Nkululeko Sibanda is spokesman for Zimbabwe's opposition MDC Alliance. You're speaking with me from the capital, Harare. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, August 6th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. 11 primary school students have died and 27 others seriously injured after a truck rammed their school bus, plunging it into a river near Mwingi town in Kenya's former eastern province on Saturday night. 9 of the students died on the spot, 1 on the way to the hospital, and another died while undergoing treatment at Kenyatta Hospital in Nairobi. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the ill-fated bus had defied school bus traffic rules not to travel late at night.
Sombamu engulfed Mwingi Level 4 Hospital on Sunday morning when the families of the deceased pupils converged at the hospital after receiving the heartbreaking news. Earlier this year, the Minister of Education ordered that school buses should not be on road after 6 p.m. It is yet not clear why the driver of the ill-fated school bus went against this rule. Confirming the accident, Kitui Officer Commanding Police Division Muthuri Mwongera said the school bus was hit by the truck, causing the bus to roll several times before plunging into a dry riverbed. The pupils were returning from a trip to Mombasa when their school bus collided with a truck at Kanginga Bridge. The health officer at the scene says that some of the survivors were treated and discharged from the hospital.
The 37 persons who came to the hospital, with 37, 5 were adults, and of the 5 adults, 4 were safely treated and discharged. One of them, the matron, is currently in a female surgical ward. She sustained head injury. The other 32 were mainly children, aged between 12 to 15 years.
The 2 who are in Kenyatta National Hospital, one now is out of coma and is talking, while the other one is still in coma, and we pray that they will be out of coma.
Political leaders led by President Uhuru Kenyatta, Kitui Governor Charity Ngilu and Wiper Party Leader Kalonzo Musyoka condoled with families, describing the accident as unfortunate. Kalonzo Musyoka and Charity Ngilu, who visited the casualties at the hospital, say probe be carried out to establish the cause of the accident.
If the signages were on, then it can be seen that the drivers may have been negligent. But in the absence of that kind of thing, you can see it is not acceptable.
It should be my responsibility and other people's responsibility to exercise care and to ensure that we protect lives of people by driving well.
According to new school transport traffic rule in Kenya, a motor vehicle for transporting children to and from school for any non-school school-related activity should not operate past 6 p.m. On the other hand, Education Cabinet Secretary Amina Mohamed, who spoke from Kenyatta National Hospital in Nairobi, where some of the students were receiving special medical attention, says some students have been treated and discharged, while those critically injured are still recuperating at various hospitals in Nairobi and Kitui counties.
Doctors at Kenyatta, Nairobi and Mwingi Level 4 hospitals are doing everything possible to ensure that those injured recover.
According to the recent published World Health Organization report on road safety, between 3,000 and 13,000 Kenyans lose their lives in road traffic crashes every year. The driver of the truck has since been arrested and is set to be arraigned in court today, Monday. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Malawian Vice President Solos Chilima over the weekend launched a new political party, the United Transformation Movement, to run against President Peter Mutharika in the 2019 presidential election. Mr. Chilima quit the ruling Democratic Progressive Party after accusing officials of corruption. He has vowed to investigate alleged corrupt officials if he is elected president. Patricia Kaliati is the Secretary General of the United Transformation Movement Party. She says hundreds turned out to witness the launch, including Malawi's own soccer legend, Kina Piri.
We launched nationally at Central Region. It was so overwhelming. People are just coming in, and they're still calling us to be in our locations. We went to Blanta. It was more than what we did in the Central Region. And yesterday we were in Mzuzu, that is the northern part of Malawi. It was also very, very, very good.
As you know, Mr. Chilima has been vice president. So what message are you giving the people that is different from the government now?
I thank you very much for that question. That is Dr. Saul Chilima is the vice president. But let me remind you, even in a family, we keep saying the man is the head of the house. And in a nation as well, the president is the head of the nation who governs the nation. The vice president is there on delegation purposes. The vice president is there to give pieces of advice. It's up to the president to take those pieces of advice or not to take pieces of advice. And this is what was happening in Malawi, that when the vice president was coming in to say, why can't we do this, why can't we do that? Those pieces of advice were not even taken. Now, we are saying the message is issues to do with youth. In job creation through industrialization and rejuvenation, job creation schools through entrepreneurship schools, motivation of civil servants. We are looking forward to make sure that we have a number of universities with good accommodation and good facilities as we are ending quota system. We are looking forward to our government come 2019, 21st May. We are looking forward to empowering the youth. This is the government which is going to look into the welfare of the people, even the salaries of the people. And this movement, the United Transformation Movement, is for the youth. Some of us, seasoned politicians and big enough as I am, is just to help them. They are our brothers. They are our children. My brother, I can talk for 5 hours and maybe might not have other programs because I have a lot of programs which UTM is going to give to the Malawian people.
One of the comments the former vice president made was that his administration will investigate alleged corruption among officials of the current government. You know, Madam Kaliati, that corruption is almost like synonymous with Malawian politics. Do you think the vice president has the political will or will have the political will if he becomes the new president to do what he just said?
Just wait and see. After 21st May 2019, please, just have a holiday and be here for only 6 months. You see a number of miracles which are going to happen. He is going to work on that. And we've told you that this is a new movement. It's United Transformation Movement, whereby we are bringing together. What brings corruption? It's because as leaders, they don't make Malawians to unite. As leaders, because of tribalism, regionalism, we find that in some parts of the country, they're not even that developed. So these are the issues which bring in corruption. So we are saying we are having a movement of each and every Jim and Jack, who is supposed to be part and parcel. And what we want is to bring the youth closer to government. When you're closer to government, you're part and parcel of the process.
Patricia Kaliati is the Secretary General of the newly formed United Transformation Movement Party of Malawi. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. In the Gambia, there's been a shortage of blood bags at the country's main referral hospital, the Edward Francis Small Teaching Hospital. Medical workers said the shortage is having a devastating impact on patient care. Pandere Umbaya reports.
Gambia's health delivery system has reached an emergency situation, with hospitals lacking basic medical supplies. Government hospitals around the country have been operating without blood bags for a while now. Blood bags are used to support patients in need of blood before or after surgeries. As a result, the government had to place an emergency order to purchase blood bags from Senegal. Momodou Lamine Jammeh is the spokesperson at the Edward Francis Small Teaching Hospital in Banjul.
We placed an order. The orders are delayed, but they will arrive Monday. According to the chief pharmacist, they will arrive on Monday, inshallah. But we have smaller quantity of stock that we are using now.
Jamme said some of the blood bags they have in stock are expired. Hence, they decided not to use it for health reasons. He says the blood bag shortage is impacting on patient care at the hospital. The Gambian Resident Doctors Association have been calling for a total revamping of the country's health sector. For example, they said some of the basic medical supplies that should facilitate their work are not available in the hospitals. The doctors recently even had to embark on a sit-down strike to showcase their grievances. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pande Rimbai reporting.
And for Daybreak Africa, suppose here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with athletics, where Kenya proved her dominance in athletics on the continent once again as the East Africans edged out defending champion South Africa and host Nigeria to win the 21st edition of the African Senior Athletics Championship, which rounded up on Sunday night at the Stephen Keshi Stadium in Asaba. Kenya topped the medals table with 11 gold, 6 silver and 2 bronze medals, while defending champions South Africa secured 9 gold, 13 silver and 8 bronze medals. Host Nigeria came third with 9 gold, 5 silver and 5 bronze medals. More than 1,000 athletes from 52 countries participated in the 21st edition of the championships. The last edition was won by South Africa in 2016. Head of the global athletics body, the IAAF, Sebastian Coe, says Africa has the potential to host the World Athletics Championship in future.
One of the ambitions I set myself when I became president was that we are in a much better position within 10 years of delivering the World Senior Athletics Championships to Africa. Now that will be for my colleagues in Africa to decide the best venue, the best city, the best host country for that. That is a responsibility that should lie with the Area Association. But I'm very clear that our sport is global. It needs to be seen to be global. We need to put funding and resource behind those programs that allow us to genuinely say we are the most global sport, which I think we are. We're certainly the most accessible sport, and we are the sport that Africa is most successful at.
In basketball news, the third NBA Africa Basketball Without Borders game was played in South Africa this past weekend, which saw Team World record a hat-trick of wins as it beat Team Africa 96-92 at the Sun Arena in Pretoria. The home team trailed 54-47 at halftime but made a comeback only to miss the mark right at the end. It was a similar story last year, though this edition saw the players expend a bit more competitive energy than is customary for exhibition games. Some of the NBA stars like Danilo Gallinari and Joel Embiid were glad to be part of the exhibition game.
It was a great game, first of all. I thought it was a great show. Team Africa played very well. We played well, too. And they could have won. We could have won. It was a last possession thing, game. So, but I'm glad that at the end of the day, our goal is to give a show to the fans.
Man, I loved it. I mean, I want to come back. I mean, it was great doing Basketball Without Borders, doing the Habitat for Humanity, coming playing here. Just the passion, the fans. I loved it. So I look forward to coming back.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, August 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a good week.
Hello, I'm Lina Ahmadou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss menopause, a time in women that often indicates the end of fertility. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.